We ask all the questions that love us so dear. We're dads on the air. We're back, we're dads on the air.
And welcome to Dads on the Air this Tuesday, 16 March 2010. And this is Bill Cable from Mediate Now, and in the studio with me is Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Yes, good morning, everybody.
And it's been a big week. We've got a lot to talk about today, and we've also got a special interview by our own rocking pop, Peter Vandervoorde, which we'll be playing shortly. But in the meantime, part of the, or this week's show is perhaps dedicated to taking action, maybe in particular taking political action, because what we're involved in has been described as a war to try and get some equal rights in this area of children and families. And to that end, Dads on the Air was invited to a meeting at Parliament House in Sydney last Friday. And there were a number of groups representing dads and children, including Dads in Distress, Dads for Kids, the Fatherhood Foundation, the Equal Parenting Party, Family Voice, COPAC, Coalition of Parents and Abducted Children, there was Dads on the Air, of course, and there was a representative from Men's Health Network and Fathers for Equality. And with that group, we've mapped out a way to actually get some action going. I think we've had too many times where people have sat around and perhaps talked about things rather than getting things done. But remember, this is an election year, and it's time we all started moving.
That's right. Time to man the trenches, guys. It's the men's movement is under attack. Fatherhood is under attack, basically. We've got politicians. We've got Emily's List, who is a feminist organisation that seems to be stacking a lot of the government institutions around the country with their members who are voting in draconian anti-male legislation. And we had a bit of a call to arms at this particular meeting. I'd actually like to read Tony Miller, who was the founder of Dads in Distress, who actually attended the meeting and chaired the meeting. And this is what he had to say, which is recorded in the Fatherhood Foundation's monthly email. Tony Miller has written, the meeting was an extremely emotional one for me personally. You see, I have had one hell of a year this year, but I won't go into that tonight, because what's more important is the fact that these leaders met, discussed and planned action to ensure that in the future dads will still be relevant, that fathers and their children will be able to enjoy a relationship with each other, that a presumption of 50-50 shared care for be paramount in any future legislation, that possible funding will be made available to ensure that these frontline fighters of the movement will be able to represent those that seek their assistance. You see, don't kid yourselves that fathers of this country are considered relevant, because there is a force out there with the agenda of making sure that we are not. Now, you might think that I'm being alarmist, just pick up a newspaper or turn to a talk back show on the radio on any day, and of course not this show, we're the opposite of that, but anyway, going on with what Tony's written, you will read or hear how fathers are portrayed in the media, but thankfully we, and that means you, have some frontline soldiers who continue to stand guard and are ready to fight on your behalf. I looked around the room in Parliament House yesterday and witnessed the heartache, the sorrow, and I can't give up. I won't give up attitude of the fighters, but I also caught the passion in their eyes and in their hearts, and that is something special, something you cannot take away from them. Everyone has their own issues or opinions, but yesterday was all about working together to ensure the heartache and sorrow we have all witnessed, either personally or for those we represent, does not continue. Bottom line, it was about our children. Right here, right now, I just want to thank you. I want to thank Ian Harris, producer, and his merry men who filmed the entire event for a television documentary he wants to make about fathers to expose the truth. And I want to say thank you to Warwick Marsh, who made this happen and who continues to make things happen for fathers of this country. I can honestly say that without Warwick, the movement wouldn't be. I want to say thank you to all of the participants who put aside their differences to come together and open their hearts to each other. And I want to thank my Fiji family who prayed and fasted so that this day would be a success, and a success it was. Individually, we have a voice, but together we have a movement. That was Tony Miller, from the founder of Dads in Distress.
Now, Ian, you mentioned Emily's List. This, for those people who aren't familiar with Emily's List, it's a group, it's a party within a party, I suppose, and there's a great concern about the anti-male women in the Labor Party, which are getting increasing strength due to the work of Emily's List. If you want to find out about Emily's List, they've actually got their own website, which is www.emilyslist.org.au. That's emilyslist.org.au. And Emily's List sponsors, searches out, coaches and supports women considered suitable for a political career. One thing that was suggested at our meeting on Friday was that we should establish something similar on the other side, something we could maybe call Bob's List, which might have a counterpart role to support men as political candidates. And just this is particularly relevant at the moment because there are two state elections next weekend on the 20th of March. There's one in South Australia and one in Tasmania. And in South Australia, the Emily's List shows a number of candidates in that election. I'll just run quickly through a couple of the names here. Adriana Christopoulos in candidate for Fisher, Mary Lou Corcoran, Viv Maher, they're all women I notice, Grace Portalisi, Vanessa Varto, Lynn Brewer, Gail Gargo, Robin Girotti, Stephanie Key, Jennifer Rankin, Gay Thompson and Lisa Vlahos. And in Tasmania, for any listeners down there, the people we've got to watch out for are Michelle Cripps in Bass, Kay Eastley, Madeline Ogilvy, Judy Richmond, Rebecca White, Heather Butler, Lara Giddings, Michelle O'Byrne and Lisa Singh. So if you see those names appear in these elections, these are the people not to vote for.
Yeah, we should also add that we here at Dads on the Air are not opposed to women entering politics at all, that we actually encourage women to be involved in politics. We encourage women to be involved in all aspects of our society. We value the contribution of women, but these particular women have a strong feminist agenda, which they are representing, which is not just about equality and promoting women. It's extremely anti-male. It's basically misandry, and this is why we here at Dads on the Air are sounding the alarm bells about these particular politicians. It's not just because they are women. We like women in politics. We like women's views generally, as long as they are fair and balanced and they're not pushing a feminist agenda.
Yes, we don't want them to traduce the reputations of men in that in their electorates.
Yes, now look, we've just been joined in the studio by Max King, who has been a contributor to Dads on the Air in the past. Good morning, Max, and welcome to Dads on the Air.
Oh, good morning, gentlemen. It's very nice to be here again. Yeah. Talking about Emily's List, the promotion of the feminist agenda is really a promotion of the anti-male agenda, and that is what long-term veterans of the family law movement learn terribly. And it's terrible how the victims, the male victims and the family victims, keep coming back relearning and reinventing the wheel.
Yes, well, absolutely. Anything to add to that, Bill, or should we go straight to a song and then listen to Peter's interview?
I think we should do that. We've got a lot to talk about. We'll come back to that after we listen to what Pete's got to say.
Okay, well, this is a track by Gary Moore.
Something else to do. They grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress, 1300 853 437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
Today we bring you part one of an in-depth two-part interview with a father who has been jailed several times for such dangerous crimes as sending a birthday card to his daughter and for daring to watch his son play school sports. This father's plight clearly exemplifies everything that is wrong with the worldwide family justice system, now a multi-billion dollar industry of which the symbolic head is the family court. We sincerely hope that this father's experience is another wake-up call to all those mothers and fathers who think this could never happen to them. We hope everyone seriously reassess their perceived legal rights as a parent, because the truth is, you have none. And I repeat, parents do not have a legal parenting right. Unfortunately, the mistaken belief in these perceived rights cause many parents to seek justice in a family justice system which does not offer due process of law and is more to do with serving the economic well-being of thousands of meddling bureaucrats growing into a multi-billion dollar worldwide industry. Unless you have made a preemptive first strike or have $1 million to spare, the family court will do nothing for you except sever your relationship with your children and confiscate your family wealth, thereby stealing your kids' inheritance. It is a social engineering hellhole to be avoided at all cost. Ask anyone who's been there. They will all tell you the end result will leave you emotionally and economically destitute. The stealing of children is a crime against humanity, and fighting this crime in the family courts will only make your situation impossible. If you decide to go this way and persist in seeking equality, justice and your human rights, it will cause you to spiral into the devastating situation this dad finds himself in. Rick, not his real name for legal reasons, joins us to tell us his story in the hope it will alert people of how easy it is to spiral into an impossible situation which severely punishes you for daring to attempt to remain in your children's lives. Rick, welcome to Dad's on the Air, and thank you for joining us today to tell us your story.
Pleasure, Peter.
Now, Rick, you're a separated father who's unexpectedly found himself at the receiving end of some of the worst excesses of the current family justice system, which has led you to spending time in jail for the crime of sending a birthday card to your estranged daughter. And we'll come to that shortly. But first of all, can you tell us a little about your family situation? You have how many children?
Three.
And what are they, boys or girls?
Well, I had three children. I've got two girls and a boy.
And how old were they when you and your family, when you and your wife parted?
Well, we didn't part. I'm not separated. I'm involuntarily divorced. I think it's important we don't slip into industry euphemisms here, please.
Sure.
When I was ejected from my house, my elder daughter, she would have been about 12. My son would have been about 10, and my younger daughter was 6.
And how long ago was that?
September 2004.
Okay. Let's start then from the time that one or both of you decided that the relationship was no longer something that was able to be salvaged. Tell us briefly how all this began for you and your children.
Sure. I got home on Friday night, and the house was empty. And I sort of eventually realised that my wife had taken the children down to her sister's beach house for the school holidays. I'd arranged to take my children to see their grandparents interstate the following weekend. And what happened was I got a strange phone call from my mother interstate telling me I better come over and talk to them. I didn't know what she was talking about, and I said, "Well, I will be over with the kids next weekend." And she said, "No, you are separating, apparently." So this was all news to me. Then a couple of days later, a letter arrived from a dreadful suburban lawyer demanding I get out of my house.
So you couldn't see any of this coming? There must have been some lead up to it, perhaps.
Oh, look, we were under financial pressure, and
yes.
We'd had a couple of lean years, and my wife, the pressure sort of didn't, she didn't, it got to her, pressure got to her, but, so things, things were far from, ideal, but, you know, never in my wildest dreams would I have considered a divorce simply because of the children, you know.
And so there was no, she didn't let you know in advance, and there was no agreement about you, about any ongoing contact with your children at the time of separation, for instance.
Separation was never discussed.
No.
Nothing was ever discussed.
So at this point there was no legal process or anything. Did you have any idea of what could happen at that particular time? Did you ever give it any thought of what could happen following separation?
I was like everyone else. I assumed that... I had no idea. I didn't realise it was such a totalitarian rot that it... Mm. Which became obvious a bit later. I didn't realise you could be, A, divorced against your wishes, B, lose your children as a result, C, have your assets plundered, and D, be jailed if you objected to the whole process.
Yeah, it's terrible, and people just don't realise how bad it is.
Well, it's organised crime, according to constitutional expert Stephen Baskerville.
Yes, yeah.
Organised crime.
Well, it is, isn't it? There's a lot of money involved.
Mm.
So how did you first realise that there were attempts were being made to separate or alienate? Did you have any contact, for instance, at the start or not? Or what sort of arrangement?
Oh, hell no. What happened was I, much against my wishes, I got sort of jackknifed out of my home by my well-meaning parents. I didn't see my children for about a month, and I eventually thought, well, I'm getting sick of this, and I rang up my wife and said, I'm coming around to see them. It was one Sunday. And she rather hysterically said, no, you're not, blah, blah, blah. I knew what she'd do. She was going to head to her sister's place, her unmarried sister, who I'd got on very well with for 18 years, never had a cross word. So, suspecting what was going to happen, I went and bought myself a deck chair and the Sunday papers and went round there and sat on the veranda reading the papers after knocking on the door and saying I wanted to see the children. The wallopers turned up about half an hour later. We had a brief civil chat on the veranda. They went inside, they came out, told me my children were terrified, asked me to move on, which I did. And that was that. But I didn't realise while they were in there that they apparently recommended to my wife and her sister that they get an intervention order on me. Now, when I rang up, when all this started and I was trying to work out what on earth was happening, I tried to check with the local police station why, where, what was going on. But they checked the log police records and said there was no report made of that day. And I said, well, why not? They said, well, obviously there was nothing happening. There was no incident. Which begs the question, why would police recommend intervention orders against law-abiding citizens where there's no evidence whatsoever to indicate one is required?
But there were allegations made.
Oh, well, in what way? Not until the lawyers got involved.
All right. Why would they ask the police to intervene? In what?
Oh, well, good question. Look, my wife was, she was of rather a nervous disposition. She grew up in a family where I think the husband who I didn't ever meet, the father, I didn't ever meet him because he died before we got married, but he was a returned serviceman. I think he was an alcoholic, and I think, well, they say he was a violent alcoholic. Now, I don't know, but when my wife was 10, she and her sister and her mother fled the family home when my wife was 10, her older sister was 15, and with the youngest of the three sons. And she went and lived somewhere in Melbourne, and I didn't realise until later, I lived incommunicado for the next 15 years or so because, according to a family friend, they were terrified the husband was going to find them and kill them all.
Mm.
Now, my wife didn't see her father again until he was on his deathbed about 15 years later. So I would have thought that, you know, this may have had an effect on a young, impressionable child.
I would have thought so too. Yeah.
And I would have thought any psychologist worthy of the name would think it worthy of investigation at least.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. That a lot of these stories, when you look in the, there's a generational component. You know, a lot of these children are the product of dysfunctional families, unfortunately, and our children are being subjected to a similar situation. Unfortunately, the system allows this.
For sure. Very strangely, my wife, you know, she, whenever she'd come, occasionally, you know, you'd find a story in the paper. It doesn't happen very often because it's very hush-hush, but occasionally a story would appear in the paper of a father who'd had his children stolen by these divorce industry criminals, and she'd be absolutely flabbergasted by what was going on, and she'd so interested she'd read it out to me, you know, which was unusual, but that happened on more than one occasion, and looking back on it, that was very strange, but anyway.
So, moving on, you hadn't seen your children at this point for how long?
Well, I hadn't seen them for about a month. And then, although, actually, before that happened, at one stage, hang on, I better check the diary. At one stage, I did get a strange letter from a solicitor she'd engaged telling me to go to the solicitor's office one Friday, which I did, and said, if you want to see your children on the weekend, sign this document. And it was just a ridiculous procedure to go through, whereby my wife would sit, you know, we'd meet at the local park for 2 hours, I'd see my children. And I said, I remember saying to this lawyer, you know, seems like a lot of trouble to go to just to facilitate an ordinary meeting. But this lawyer, she'd had a clause into the Celestine by now, you know, and as we all know, there's no, the children are the leverage, and there's no money made unless they steal the kids.
Exactly.
So anyway, I signed this letter and I signed this thing. And at one stage, so we did that. So I saw him for a couple of hours then. I also turned up at a school play, a school function one night, and I saw them briefly then, but during which my wife handed me a scribbled piece of paper saying, sign this. She wanted me to agree to 5 hours contact a week every Sunday.
This is sorry to interrupt, this, you hadn't been to court or anything. These are just private arrangements trying to be made with her lawyer and yourself and between you.
I hadn't been to court.
Right.
And anyway, what happened, I can't remember, what happened, I refused to sign it. I said something like, you know, even child molesters get more time with their children, ridiculous thing. And then I remember we were walking out, I saw the kids at the end of the play, had a very nice, little, very brief meeting. We were walking out, got talking to some other parents out in the lobby, and I turned around and my children had disappeared. And I was, my wife and her sister had just bolted with the children, so I chased them out the street in the dark and found them. And not unsurprisingly, I was a little bit peeved off by this, and said, you know, what the hell are you doing running away with these kids? And said, you know, this is war, this is legal war, I meant, thinking that, you know, thinking that family law was covered by some semblance of due process.
Yes, we all did.
Little did I realise.
Yes.
But anyway, so that's what happened. Anyway, I got an intervention order. I got hit with the inevitable intervention order.
This is before any...
before anything, yeah, before anything. The first thing that happened was the intervention or lock.
So this was your first signs that your process to alienate you from your children and it was taking place. You suddenly realised, hey, what's going on here?
No, I still didn't realise. I'm very dumb. I'm very dumb.
Hindsight, I suppose you can...
Yeah, that's right. No, I was very slow. It took me a few years.
Mm.
I got the intervention orders... so that was that, and I didn't see my children for about 5 months, I think it was, 6 months.
Wow, that's before any court orders.
Well, actually, we had an intervention order thing, and I got dragged into, and rather than contest it, my lawyer, you know, said...
So what did the intervention order say? What was on the basis of what?
Well, no, but you don't need to, you just apply for them. You don't need any basis. There's no evidence required for them to be granted. Cynical magistrates just dish them out at the drop of a hat because they're providing patronage to their colleagues.
So they were accusing you of violence or anything at this point?
They don't have to. It's enough to say they're apprehensive. It's enough for the applicant to say they're apprehensive.
So they have a fear of you having being around.
At one stage, her lawyer, I was up against the husband and wife team initially.
Mm-hmm.
The barrister, the husband turned up in court and claimed that I had threatened to kidnap the children and take them to the Latrobe Valley. Now, I don't know if you've been to the Latrobe Valley, but you wouldn't take your worst enemy down there. It's a bloody dreadful place.
This is at the time of the intervention order?
Yeah, one of the intervention orders, yeah.
One of the intervention orders?
Well, I went back to try and get it thrown off, and it was. I wish I'd kept count on how many times I've been to court, actually. It'd have to be over 50 or 60, I reckon.
And you've never had any court-ordered contact or anything? Never had any custody applications or anything?
I was a legally unimpeachable citizen. as they say. There was no evidence whatsoever to suggest anything.
And prior to all this, you've never in problem with any trouble with the law or violence or anything like that?
Of course not.
No. No, so all of a sudden, upon separation, all these accusations come out.
Of course.
So what sort of advice at this time were you getting from your friends and your relatives?
Well, none of my friends were... I haven't got too many friends that are divorced, actually. My relatives would have no idea what was going on. They're like the rest of us, ignorant as to what's going on. So, you know, I was sort of frog... My octogenarian parents were dragged over... for some reason, and the one thing I can remember being told by someone one day is that you never leave the house, which I don't know if that's right or not, but so sure enough I left the house, but I don't think it would have made much difference, and then after that, I remember her lawyer saying to me, you better get yourself a lawyer, and little realizing that that was her meal ticket. So I got myself a lawyer until the money ran out, but I was. He seemed to be doing nothing. He did nothing. All he was doing was responding, and so, you know, he'd get these ridiculous faxes sent on a Friday afternoon, and nothing was happening anyway. So, anyway, eventually, when the intervention order was first applied for, I had a bloke. He's a criminal lawyer, and he sort of told me to accept it, as they all do. You know, accept it, deny it, accept it, but deny it, or something. And part of the deal was you could have the old supervised access, despite, you know, no evidence being of you. Whereby a couple of nominees were meant to front up every Sunday with their children, waste 7 or 8 hours of their life aside. So after about 3 months, this eventually happened, and one of the children's godmothers turned up, and I'd sort of spoken to her on the phone that morning and made a couple of jocular remarks to her. Anyway, she turned up in the local park. It was about 40 degrees, December. And I said to her, and she said, she sort of got out of the car and started barking these orders at me, for God's sake. And I said, we're not going to your house because your wife says you can't. I said, well, yeah, excuse me, you know, what's going on here? I didn't have my phone. I said, there's nothing on the orders about all that. And I'm not going to sit in the park for 8 hours in 40 degree heat. Anyway, so with that, she turned on her heel and went. So that was my first contact for about 3 months, lasted for 5 minutes. But anyway, we eventually got back into court. I remember this was the... one of these barristers made the fatal suggestion to me that we get a psychologist involved to do a family report.
Did you know what a family report meant?
I had no idea.
Neither did I. I that was put in my case as well, and you wonder what's going on. What does it all mean? Bewildered, aren't you?
It's a cross-referencing thing. Yes, they all refer business to each other.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
That's what it is.
But when it first happens in court, you're bewildered. And did you feel a disempowerment?
The first thing that strikes you is an air of overwhelming unreality. It's like you've wandered into a pantomime farce, I reckon.
Yes.
And once again, Baskerville's got a good quote in this book of his about... I just got it.
Taken into custody.
Kafkaesque trial. You know, it's a farce. The whole thing is a farce. It's just a put-on job for all these people to act, and you get all these people... I do not shrink from it, yeah. No, it's just a farce. It's a play. Everyone's play acting, and they, you know, the same old faces appear before.
Yes.
Same old faces week in, week out, and they're all acting a role.
Yes, yes.
But when you first encounter it, it's bewildering. Not to mention very frustrating.
Absolutely, absolutely. You're listening to Dads on the Air, coming to you from 2GLF in Sydney, and don't forget the program will be available on our website later today at www.dadsontheair.net. My name's Peter Vandervoort, and I'm speaking with Rick, a separated father who has spent time in jail for sending a birthday card to his daughter. We'll be back after the break.
Don't waste your money in the family court. There's no justice there for the child to support. Just don't be tempted to take these courses. Any orders given to court won't enforce. A kangaroo court full of lawyers who know the tactic of the lay will make you go
slow. This will drain all your money and cause your great distress. It will leave you exhausted and emotional mess. If you don't have the children, you don't stand a chance. Abuse of our kids, it will only enhance an industry of misery that does not make sense, except to all those getting rich at our expense. So don't waste your money in the family court. There's no justice there for the child you support. Just don't be tempted to take this course. As any orders that you've given, the court won't enforce. Whoever has the kids can do what they like. As an impotent court allows them this right. A failed institution claims to uphold the rights of our children. It's a joke that is told. It's not about justice, it's not about law. If you're without the kids, you've drawn a short straw. Lords getting rich from our demise stand condemned. So don't feed the greedy. Instead, we recommend that you don't waste your money in the family court. There's no justice there for the child to support. Just don't be tempted to take this course. As any orders that you've given, the court won't enforce. Every lawyer tells you that you're gonna win the case. But if you haven't got the children, you're not in the race. Unless residential parents are made to comply. You wasted all your money and can kiss your kids goodbye. Any changes made to the family law will be totally useless when they're allowed to ignore. Compliance is the key, without this you've lost. You won't see the children at all at great cost. So don't waste your money in the family court. There's no justice there for the child you support. Just don't be tempted to take this course. As any orders that you've given, the court won't enforce. So don't waste your money in the family court. There's no justice there for the child you support. Just don't be tempted to take this course. As any orders that you've given, the court won't enforce.
Hey man, don't worry, be happy. Let's have another smoke, man. Don't worry, be happy. That smoke.
Oh, that smoke so good, man.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
We're back speaking with disenfranchised, separated father, Rick. Not his real name for legal reasons. Rick, go on with your story here. You, at this point, you hadn't... there's still no custody or settlement of property or anything taken place. This is all... At this point, you're still dealing with the allegations of abuse and apprehended violence orders taken out against you. Is that right? You were still dealing with all them?
Well, look, we saw this ridiculous, this sham psychologist, and he sat in the corner taking notes with his HB pencil while I and my children were in this very artificial situation of catching up for the first time in about 5 months while this bloke was sitting there like a constipated school mum taking notes. And anyway, he hit the F5 button on his computer later and claimed that my children were terrified of me, that he suspected I had a long history of intimidating my wife. And also there was some... they tried to come up with some alleged assault of my young son about 9 months previously. Now, this was... I can remember the occasion... it was about the only time in my life I'd ever reprimanded my son. We were a very shockingly negligent in the discipline area, my wife and I.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I think it probably gave him a shock because it was about the only time it ever happened. And it sort of came up. What happened? Oh, I remember he was very upset for some reason, and I went into his room to see what was the trouble, and he ran out and kicked me in the shins with his boots. So I read the riot act to him, and, you know, as you do.
Yes. Being a parent.
That's right. Being a parent, my children, no one else's, certainly not some bureaucratic flunky sitting in an office in St. Kilda Road. But anyway, and after I hadn't seen my son for a while, this sort of came up on a... affidavit about 5 months after I'd been booted out of the house, and obviously according to the affidavit, it said, he said, I know what you're going to tell him about the time he belted me up. recommend, sorry.
Yep.
I'm forgetting who I am sometimes.
Yes.
Anyway, this psychologist claimed that I punched him 12 times, kicked him half a dozen times, and all this and that. And as I said to him later, this bloke, I said, well, okay, I can't kick anyone in the... Well, I'm a right footer, and years ago I had an industrial accident and lost some toes off my right foot, and the ones that are still there are pins, so you can't kick anything in that manner. It's just excruciatingly painful. So that reduces the likelihood of him being kicked by 50% straight away.
And these are allegations made by your wife?
Yeah, just on affidavits, of course.
And your child was never asked about these things?
Well, I dare say the psychologist must have quizzed him about it.
Okay.
But as I said, you know, it came to light 6 months, 5 months after I moved out of the house.
Yes.
And 9 months after, nearly over 9 months since it happened. It was absolute bullshit, of course, excuse my French. And I said to this bloke, you know, surely he would have been rushed to hospital? No. Seen a doctor at least? No. Would have been covered in bruises, and he was bathing daily and going to swimming lessons once a week. And if he's covered in bruises, any mother worth her salt would have noticed it, as would any other sibling. So, you know, the story didn't stand up, but he wasn't interested in that. Everything had been predetermined, of course.
Yes. So,
anyway, in his wisdom, this shonk gave me 8 hours a week with my children. Okay, so awarded the children 8 hours a week with their father and had booked himself a couple of more sessions in advance, of course, in the meantime.
So he recommended this to the court?
Yeah.
Well, he put in his report. Yeah.
Yeah, in part of the sham play acting that goes on.
Oh, it is. Yes.
They're experts. We do what they say.
Yes.
This is a farce. But anyway, so we did that. In the meantime, I was trying to... I was seriously trying to show him where he'd gone wrong, and I had this delightful email from my younger daughter at the time, when we were sitting on the computers side by side, and I was teaching her how to use email, and she sent me an email address saying, and I've got it up here, Dear Rick, now she was in her first year of school, so it said, Dear Rick, you are a nice person. I like you very much, and everybody likes you, Rick. Now, she got that last bit wrong, but apart from that, it was a very touching little post that any father would be delighted with.
And she was just started, she was 5 or 6?
Well, she was 6, but she was in the first year of prep school.
Yes, yes.
And in actual fact, the date was sent about 2 weeks before, I think we split up, or before I shouldn't use that word, until I got booted out.
Yes.
Anyway, so I lodged this with... I showed the psychologist this a few times, saying, oh, kiddo, this is hardly indicative of domestic tyranny. What's going on?
Yes.
I lodged it with the court, with the family court, umpteen times, but no one ever took me... No one's interested in evidence. It's a sham process.
Yes.
It's a due process fiasco.
Oh, you can buy these reports with a predetermined outcome. A lawyer engages a psychologist who will write these reports with a predetermined outcome to favour their client.
Of course, that's right.
You know, the psychologists...
It's a corrupt process, the whole thing.
And people have challenged it with the psychologist registration board on the basis of, their responsibilities and so on, but they ignore it.
Well, psychologists are Western society's version of the witch doctor, basically.
Yes.
Aren't they?
They look after each other.
They're shams.
Yep.
They're frauds.
Yep.
Their discipline hasn't got any connection to science whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
They're bloody bone pointers. That's all they are.
But some of them support our view as well.
Oh, when it suits them?
Yeah,
possibly. When it suits them.
Right.
I wouldn't count on that if, there's a large fee standing between you and... the other opinion.
Yes.
But anyway, so I tried to engage him in this, and before the second, 6 months later, and he had some nonsense written, and he got everything wrong. I mean, his reports were just littered with factual errors, and I tried to point them out to him, but he wasn't interested, so before the second appointment was about 6 months later, and I had the children the day before, and I thought, well, I better indulge in a bit of good old-fashioned bribery and do something they enjoy, so they're in a good frame of mind tomorrow. So we went out and did, I think I took a rock climbing or something. They all enjoyed that, had a hell of a time. I turned up the next day, and I rang him and I said, I rang the secretary and said, now what time do you want me in? They said 9:30. I was 5 minutes away, and she rang me and said, oh, come make it an hour and a half later. She's got to go through all this stuff for the others first, which I suspected, which is why I rang him in the first place. So that really annoyed me.
Yep.
I got up there, and I walked in, and my son was out in the foyer, sitting in the chair, said, g'day, how you going? Chum, blah, blah, blah. And he wouldn't look at me in the eye. He was reluctant to talk to me. He was very taciturn. I said, come out. And I thought he might have been worried because the secretary was around and overhearing. So I said, come out in the corridor, we'll have a yak. He wouldn't want to come. He didn't want to come out in the car. He's a different child, basically.
You're experiencing the first signs of alienation.
Well, I reckon they get dragged in these places. They get fed leading questions about their fathers.
Yep.
And they're
brainwashed, basically.
They're brainwashed.
And what chance have they got? Really, they've got to live in that situation. They've got to survive.
Of course. As I asked the headmaster a little bit later, or during this whole thing, who I used to see. When I used to go and pick my kids up, which I couldn't do after that because of intervention orders. But I said, in your opinion, do children always tell the truth? He said, children tell adults what they think adults want to hear.
Yes.
So these shysters feed these children, these impressionable young children, leading questions.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's an appalling, it's a shocking system, shocking process. So anyway, this bloke, he dragged my poor younger daughter out with him a bit later. She didn't want to kiss me. In front of him, so obviously they'd been getting some. Anyway, I got dragged to see him, and the first thing he said to me was, "Your children are still terrified of you." And by this time, I vented my spleen. I expressed my righteous indignation. I certainly wouldn't say I lost my temper, but I'd expressed my righteous indignation. And I said, I said he's a sham and a joke, and I said, and one thing, he hadn't accepted any of my affidavits. I mean...
And this is in the court, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I'd lodged all these affidavits, which were acknowledged by the family court, as they call it, but, I shouldn't say that, this psychologist, who also, most of his report was padded out with his bogus qualifications and... Mm. His so-called sources of information, but conspicuous by their absence were my affidavits, all the evidence on my behalf.
Yes.
Which
yes.
He didn't...
Surprise.
Well, yeah, what a surprise, that's right. I thought he might just at least make out he'd read them, but he didn't even acknowledge them.
Yes.
So anyway, I picked up my stuff and I left, and sure enough, his next report, he wanted to wind my contact back from 8 hours a month to 8 hours a... 8 hours a week to 8 hours a month. He wanted to cut it back by that much because he was claiming I had narcissistic tendencies, or the old F6 button, I think that is F6, narcissistic, the old usual psychological cliches. And by this time, so after this, I just didn't take him seriously and started taking the mickey out of him and sending him emails and calling him a sham. And
But did he, was this report in the court? And did the
It was a family report.
The court ordered that you only have 6 hours.
No, I didn't get to that.
But you never got to that.
No, then there was another, there's meant to be a third hearing, a third session with him a few months down the track. And I, rather than getting in contact with me to find out a suitable time, I just got this summons, be here then. And I thought, well, I'm working, bugger you, old son, I'm not turning up for this anymore.
Mm.
So I didn't turn up. We're in the federal court at this stage, and something happened. We were meant to started getting overnight access by September of that year, but my wife's lawyers objected to it, and my bloke said, oh, we'll just keep playing the game for another few months, and then you'll get it next time. Mm. But I didn't realise the whole point of the objection was to get into the ideologically driven family court.
Yes.
And that's what happened. So anyway, so this went on for... So I continued to see my children for 05 for about 9 hours a week, which was very unsatisfactory. And people said to me, well, you've got to be careful with these psychologists. They've got a lot of power. But I thought, well, that's all right, but we'll get into a court where evidence is heard and due process is followed and witnesses are called.
Mm.
And...
So you were getting access on the basis of his report?
Yeah.
And did the court say that's all you were allowed to have? They had ordered that way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. That was just rubber stamp.
Right.
And then eventually, at the start of 2006, my wife suddenly stopped handing the children over. And she refused to...
In contravention. Right.
Now, we were due back in the magistrate's court, I think, in about 3 or 4 weeks. So by this time I'd run out of money. I didn't have any money for lawyers, so I was just trying to muddle along myself. So I thought, oh, we'll just turn up in court, I won't do anything.
Did you sorry, Rick, did you feel at any time that you had other options, or did you have were you getting any advice at this point from your family or friends and to sort of help you along and sort of direct things or not?
But I mean, you get a lot of no one knows. Well, everyone's a mistake because they don't realise it's the fix is on. You know,
yes.
Everyone thinks you get some
justice.
People say this, some people say that.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't know what's going on.
Yes.
Anyway, the property had been all settled by this stage, but
right.
Which I just signed everything away. That's how dumb I was.
So, in the hope that you would get some peace and remain in contact with your children.
No, I knew there was a bloody hefty mortgage on the place, and I thought if I put a claim on it, the children would have to be shunted out of their home. You know, I didn't want that happening.
Yep. So
I should have put in a rider for a percentage of any proceeds from the sale, but I didn't. I was dumb, you see.
So the ex and the kids stayed in the family home.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Mm. Anyway, we got. So my solicitor. This time I was trying to get legal aid. I was always trying to get legal aid, and sometimes I'd get it, and sometimes I'd get knocked back. And at one stage, I told my solicitor, "Whatever, if we get it, next time we get it, whatever you do, don't give any more money to the psychologist who's done the family report. I'm not paying this bloke for the filching of my children." And sure enough, we got legal aid. I said, "What'd you do?" He said, "I paid the psychologist." Well, what's going on here? But you know, no run. Mm. Anyway, so we got back into court with this barrister, who I'd never met before. He said, "Okay, here's what we've got to do. We've got to get another family report. You've got to do an anger management course. And in the meantime, no contact with your children." I said, "Well, hang on." I didn't want to. Well, he didn't actually say that. He'd written it all out and wanted me to sign it. And I had my sister with me, and we were both under the strong impression that the child lawyer was insisting upon this as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anyway, he said, "I'll book the family report for 2 weeks." So he got on the phone and booked it for the session. I thought, "Oh, well, 2 weeks without the kids, all right." Did it. Now, what turned out later, this child lawyer, who was as shifty as a outhouse rat,
right.
I later had a cup of coffee with him down the track. He said, "I was very surprised you signed, agreed to no contact." So, you know.
Surprised.
Yeah. And then what happened? So 2 weeks' time, I rang up this next psychologist we'd been shunted off to. He said, "Oh, we don't want to do it. We're not doing it." They hadn't done it. So it had been cancelled. Now, I think it might have been because he realised there was no money left in the case. Anyway, so I don't know what happened. I'll just look at my diary. We got back into court, and the child lawyer stood up on his hind legs and said he was going to try and find someone to do it in the public sector so he wouldn't have to pay or something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember saying to this, I also said to this bloke, I'd been shopping around trying to find someone who could be relied on to not steal my children completely, and came up with a couple of names. I put them to the child lawyer, and one, he said to me, "I know that man very well. He's semi-retired. He won't do it." The very same day, this bloke rang me and said, "Yeah, I'll do it. No worries." But because I was trying to find a way of not having to pay any more money,
yes,
I thought I'd leave it with the child lawyer to sort out whatever he had in the pipeline. Anyway, a couple of months passed, nothing happened. Back we went to court, the child lawyer stands up and says, "Oh, it's been very difficult to arrange, blah, blah, blah." Nothing's happening. In the meantime, so he got a bit of a rocket under him from one of the, registrar or something, and he was sent off, and that's when I had a cup of coffee with him, I think. Anyway, I used to ring him up, and I remember ringing him up all the time because I was doing it myself. You know, trying to find out what was going on, were any arrangements made. And I eventually rang the two organisations he'd mentioned in court, and neither of them had ever heard of him. So, you know, he was just stringing the whole thing along.
Yes, yes.
So anyway, when he eventually got round to organising something, he eventually, I got a letter saying he'd organised this mob out at Nunawading, which is out in the sticks of Melbourne.
Yes.
And to wait for further instructions, I waited for a week or two. And I rang up, nothing happened. I rang up and they said, "Oh, yeah, look, he has been in touch, but he didn't leave us any forwarding address or contact details, so haven't been able to do anything." So this was another, you know, wasted few weeks of a children deprived of their father.
And what's going through your mind at this time? Was it outrage?
Of course, outrage, pulling my hair out. Absolutely.
And that's the trouble, isn't it, Rick? We're in a no-win situation, really, aren't we? If we simply walk away, we're labelled as deadbeat dads. And if we decide to stand and fight for the rights of our children to an ongoing relationship with both of their parents, we're labelled as angry, violent, abusive dads, not worthy of a relationship with their children.
Well, it's not even worth honouring those accusations with a reply. It's just industry propaganda. These people claim the right to steal your children, and they'll stop with nothing to do it.
Yeah.
For ideological and financial reasons.
Yes.
And, the whole point is due process of the law. If anyone's accused of any crimes, they should be tried in front of a jury of their peers, not smeared by faceless bureaucrats and penalised as a result.
Yes.
And it, begs the question, how long are we going to put up with this nonsense? I mean, it's an outrageous abuse of legislative power. No one ever hands over power willingly, which means it's going to have to be wrestled back off these people, I think.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And, that's civil war, basically.
So, has your health ever suffered as a result of all the trauma that's been forced upon you?
My health?
Yes.
Not really, no, touch wood. I mean, some reason I started eating a lot of chocolate and got very fat. In the aftermath.
Well, that could be a sign of stress.
Well, I don't know why. I've hardly eaten chocolate in my life, so I had to give up that. Thankfully, actually, what saved me was I had a bloke who I sort of knew, who was a friend of one of my son's friends, and he went through the same thing at about the same time. So we lived pretty handy. He got home one day and found someone about to clamber on top of his wife, so that was a charming. But anyway, we were thrown into each other's company about the same time, and
it was good support for one another.
Well, that's right. But I bloody shudder to think what would have happened without. And he managed to get his children every second week. He managed to avoid all this stuff, and he was a good help.
Good support.
Good friend. And but I mean, that's the thing. I mean, every. And it's a very good argument for having a mistress, really. Everyone should have a mistress, I think, because...
As a support to get... Well, when this,
if I just walked away, if I'd had a 5'5" honey to amuse myself with when all this happened, if I hadn't gone into the courts, my wife would have come looking for me, demanding to know what was going on and demanding that I give her a rest from the children. As a fellow told me he did... A few years ago, he said when this all happened to him, his children were much older. They were 17 or so. He just refused to answer. He didn't answer the lawyer's letters. He just threw them on the bin straight away. He obviously knew something about the legal system. And eventually, his exasperated wife phoned him direct and demanding to know why he wasn't responding to anything.
Yes.
And he said, "Well, we'll sort it out personally." And that's what they did. Now that's a fantastic. Now if I'd had a honey to turn to, I would have taken my mind off all this business and not got involved. But
then again, it might have been double trouble.
Well, but the thing is, I mean, you get thrown out, you get thrown into solitude, basically.
These intervention
orders say you can't associate with these people. And when you've got school-aged children, a lot of your socialising is with other parents.
Yes.
Now, all of a sudden, I found myself unable to go to the school, which meant I lost contact with all those people. So you spend a lot of time in solitude, which is very dangerous for anyone, and you can't help but stew and worry about or fret over these things.
I'm speaking with Rick, a separated father who has spent time in jail for sending a birthday card to his daughter. We'll be back after the break.
10 out of 10 for ignorance. 100% for arrogance. One call from a lawyer gives a dodgy report. So selling their soul for affluence. Writing reports that are dubious, which makes their victims furious. The
They write these reports that are thrown out of court. Their lack of ethics is curious. So beware of shunky psychologists, this self-centered group of narcissists. Their own code of ethics ignored and made useless, which helped to contribute to make our child fatherless, and so we became their antagonists. The lawyer, mother, and psychologist, this troika of psychotic anarchists, conspiring to steal our children we love. It's no wonder that we become activists. There's some that they claim to be experts, but for cash they will gladly subvert the innocent child that they're there to protect. This must be exposed to overt. So beware of shunky psychologists, this self-centered group of narcissists. Their own code of ethics ignored and made useless, which helped to contribute to make our child fatherless, and so we became their antagonists. They're hungry for prestige and money, but they're totally lacking in empathy. No conscience they have, and so they're bereft of good judgment as well as credibility. If you question their own code of conduct, the board does their best to obstruct all attempts to obtain the justice deserved for our children who'll see them corrupt. So beware of shunky psychologists, this self-centered group of narcissists. Their own code of ethics ignored and made useless, which helped to contribute to make our child fatherless, and so we became their antagonists. So beware of shunky psychologists, this self-centered group of narcissists. Their own code of ethics ignored and made useless, which helped to contribute to make our child fatherless, and so we became their antagonists. And it's so we became their antagonists. We're back with Dads on the Air.
We're back speaking with disenfranchised, separated father Rick, not his real name for legal reasons. So, Rick, you're a couple of years along now, are you?
This was about a year on.
A year on from when you first split up.
Yep.
Yep. Okay.
And since I was ejected from the home.
Yeah. Well. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Rephrase that. Yeah. Mm. So what happened then? So it escalated.
Well, so in the meantime, this bloke was failing to organise any, for you know, further therapy, as they call it, and I wasn't seeing my children. Now, eventually, we got to see this next bunch out at Nunawading. Now, I went and saw them once. He paid him the money, of course. And then he said he'd seen my wife and children the preceding week. He said, "Your children are terrified of you. They're looking out of the. They're scared you're going to come through the door at any moment." Blah blah blah. So when I had my children, they were making little vox pop movies with this digital camera. I mean, I was just putting it on the computer for some reason, and I had them. So I sent him all these computers, and they showed these three children taking the mickey out of their father and giving him a hard time and just acting the goat, mm-hmm. generally doing this and that. And I said, well, you know, anyway, my wife was the same. So the same things that I'd sent the psychologist, who wouldn't look at him. I also sent him to the judge and the family court. He wouldn't look at him either. It was a bit inconvenient, you see.
Yes.
So anyway, this bloke said, well, your wife doesn't want to continue with the process. That's it. So I thought, well, hang on, what's going on here? And then the child lawyer wrote in his report that I'd failed to cooperate, and nothing had come of the process. Now, why I, you know, desperately trying to regain contact with my children would refuse to cooperate is beyond comprehension. But, you know, they write that in there. In the meantime, I'd gone back to the courts twice to try and get contact renewed. I had to go through in front of a registrar. Now, I don't know what the registrars are. They jumped up, may want to be judges or something, but I landed twice in front of a notorious homosexualist, apparently, and the first time he knocked me back. The first time the child lawyer supported my case for renewed contact, but they knocked me back. And the second time the child lawyer changed his mind and opposed it on the strength of what he reckons the psychologist had written, and they found costs against me of about $3,000. So, and then I started getting menacing letters from her lawyers about the costs. So, this is the proudest moment of the campaign. I said, well, send us your banking details and I'll make an electronic transfer, which they did. And I paid them the grand sum of 1 cent and demanded a receipt, which I've got here somewhere, and I intend to have framed one day. But anyway, the problem was still no contact. But we were meant to have the final hearing in the...
So you weren't having any contact with your kids through all this?
None whatsoever.
Right.
None whatsoever. Meant to have the final hearing, I think it was either January or February of 2007. Because I'd refused to go and see the psychologist again, we got railroaded off to see a social worker in the family court. You know, mm-hmm. God, well, and this is how dumb I was. The alarm bells still weren't ringing.
Mm.
I went and saw this bloke. I was as sweet as pie, cooperated all day, you know, another day lost. He does his report, and he says there's obviously psychological issues with the father. Or no evidence, whatever. Mm. And no contact, he recommends.
But you're not having it anyway.
Yeah, I wasn't having it anyway. And he was saying no contact. Anyway, I thought, and as I said, I got at one stage I got collected all these affidavits. I got affidavits from a woman downstairs in the flat who asked me one day why the children weren't coming around anymore.
Mm.
I got affidavits from people who'd known me for 30 years, 40 years. I think at one stage I worked it out, I had about 7 or 8 affidavits there with these people who had some total knowledge of me that amounted to about 750 years. We had a psychologist who'd spent 2 hours in my time. I was saying, well, you know, who's the expert here? Go on, get serious.
Yes.
But, of course, that was inconvenient too, and the judge actually made a big show of dispensing with the affidavit, saying we're not here to hear what a good bloke the thing is, and threw him away.
That's lovely, isn't it? That's lovely.
Oh, that's right.
Just imagine.
Due process fiasco. These people ought to be prosecuted for denying...
Absolutely.
...denying us all due process of the law. Anyway, we came around for what was meant to be the final hearing, and the social worker's wife had the good sense to die. She decided she couldn't put up with him any longer and died. And they decided that he was an integral part of this process, and we had to have evidence from him, so it would have to be adjourned for another 6 months. Still no contact. So I asked the old tosser on the bench if I could have contact. Certainly not. Not at all.
Not even phone contact or
nothing.
Nothing at all.
Nothing whatsoever.
Just on the basis of what the mother wanted, basically.
Well, on the basis of the sham psychologists and all these other people, right. All the other industry kidnappers.
Hangers on.
Kidnappers,
yeah.
Parasites. So we went on for another 6 months. Now, what happened? In the meantime, I'd gone to some community law mob, you know, legal aid evening, and this guy, he read these draconian bureaucratic things and said, you better get your own experts, because he said, it's going to become a battle of the experts. So I went and found a psychologist who I typed in child alienation or something and ended up with her in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she gave me this industry-acknowledged test, the MMPI-2 test, it's called, industry-acknowledged,
mm-hmm.
and she said it was a a valid test. It was computer, cost me $1,000, which I could ill afford, and amazingly, it showed I was almost normal, and so we started waiving, we submitted this to the court, and I use the term court very loosely.
Yes.
It's not a court at all.
It's a tribunal.
Well, it's a bureaucratic, secret bureaucratic chamber.
Yes.
Bureaucratic flunkies running around claiming the right to steal the children of other people. Mm. Anyway, we came, come July, I think it was, my poor mother had cobbled together some money to pay a barrister, well, it was a solicitor, who said, to the player for, I don't know, it's been to go for 3 or 4 days, this thing, final hearing. But the psychologist had taken it upon himself to say that a final hearing would be a waste of time because such was my need of therapy. And so they were trying to curtail a hearing even, and I didn't realise I had that much power. So this judge, who's a prominent member of the Melbourne Racing Club, he decided to have what he called evidence in chief, where he let these people in the box but wouldn't let anyone cross-examine them. So the psychologist got in the box and handed out his drivel. The social worker got in the box and handed out his drivel. Now, this was the social worker whose evidence was considered imperative 6 months earlier. All of a sudden, we weren't allowed to cross-examine him.
Hmm.
And they were getting, spoon-lobbed, very gentle questions. Then my psychologist got in, and she had strips torn off her by the opposing vulture. Anyway, the all too obvious upshot was, predictable, was that I was told to go off and get more therapy. And, one of the cronies of these two people was recommended, and that was it. Now, I said to my lawyer, well, that's it. If we don't get any, I'll withdraw an application. So yes. We got this order that no contact, come back in 6 months. They're always adjourning it to make work for themselves, these people, the legal profession.
Yes.
They adjourn it, have a mention, put it on hold. They just make, these judges are making work for themselves.
Absolutely.
And providing business for their colleagues.
So what was your application?
I wanted 50-50.
Oh, 50-50.
I wanted 50-50.
Yep.
But after the psychologist's report, everyone was saying, well, you've got no chance of getting that.
That's custody.
I wanted to spend half the time. I wanted the children to spend half the time with me.
Right.
I'd done nothing wrong. I hadn't been accused of any crimes.
Mm.
I hadn't bloody instigated the divorce, but I didn't realise
how it all works.
Well, I didn't realise the whole point of the divorce regime was to reward the people who brought them the business.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway, I didn't go and see this other bloke for a while, and I thought, I'll go and see him, this other psychologist, just see if I could salvage anything from the wreck. So I went and saw him, and honestly, he was as nutty as a fruitcake. He made me look nearly normal. And he said to me, what can I do, what do you want me to do for you? And I said, well, look, I've got this MMPI-2 test that's saying I don't need any therapy. I want you to write a report, something along those lines, saying there's no point in you seeing me because I've been declared as sane as you. And I managed to say that with a straight face too, which was a good He said, I can't do that. And I can't remember what his reasons were. The reasons were obviously he couldn't short-circuit the whole bloody racket. But I said, okay, well, I'll come and see if you can bulk bill. And he said, I don't bulk bill. He said, well, okay, well, that's it. And he said, but as a token of goodwill, I'm not going to charge you for today's session. And I thought to myself, well, that's good, because I wasn't going to pay you, because I'd left my wallet out in the car.
Mm, so
he was never any chance of getting any money.
Yeah.
But anyway, so 3 months later, we had to go back into the so-called family court, and this time the judge made a great song and dance of the fact that I hadn't lodged any more affidavits or I hadn't done anything. And on that basis, he found that I should have no contact with my children whatsoever. And I can't remember, I think there's something about barring change of circumstances or something. Now, and that was it. Now, and the other funny thing is, when we were in there that day, there's a couple of strange people in there, and a friend of mine was there, so who are those two people? And I said, I don't know. Well, he said, ask them. So I said, who are you blokes? And they said, Australian Federal Police. So what are you doing here? He said, oh, well, we're here, there's, difficult father involved. Now, this wasn't the first time this had happened. The intervention orders, there's occasionally a big gorilla had come in, and if you object to the whole process, you have your cards marked as dangerous. And
yes.
So I walked out halfway through the summing up of this so-called judge, because I was I couldn't listen to any more of this rubbish.
This was your summing up in your case?
No. Well, I was doing it myself by this stage. No, he was giving all the reasons why I shouldn't see my children.
And you walked out in the middle of it?
I walked out.
Yes.
I'd heard enough.
Yes.
I just walked out.
Yes.
I waited outside for my friend to come out. While I was waiting outside downstairs, the two federal policemen walked out, and I said something to the effect, did you enjoy that, fellas? And they said, I think they said very sad or very They didn't actually say very criminal, but they might as well have. Anyway, so that's that. And since then, now that was I think that was in about the end of 2007 or the start of 2008.
That was part one of a two-part interview with the dispossessed father of three, Rick. Not his real name for legal reasons, and we hope to have demonstrated the real danger of entering the family justice system in a futile attempt to seek justice and the human rights for you and your children. We'll be back after the break.
So fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air, and in the studio it's Bill Cable from Mediate Now with me, Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com, and we have our guest, Max King. Just a follow-up from last week's story where we interviewed Ned Holstein from Fathers and Families, a group in based in Boston, and this was in connection with the American Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, known as DSM, and they're putting together DSM-5, where there's a big push to include parental alienation in the diagnoses under that American Bible. I'm pleased to see that a group of 50 mental health experts from 10 countries are part of an effort to add parental alienation disorder, it's now called, instead of syndrome, to the fifth edition. We found that a lot of people got hung up on whether it was a syndrome or not, so we fixed that problem. It's now been called parental alienation disorder.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a disorder, because a disorder is something that you have inside yourself. I guess they're talking about the parents who do it. I mean,
no, actually, Ian, a disorder is a voluntary condition. The DSM-4, I think, puts down about 10 disorders, such thing as histrionic, schizoid. Anyway, there are about 10 of them. One disorder that should also be in there is psychopath, but that's not actually in it yet, and I hope it will be. But the lack of parental alienation disorder in that book has been an excuse for denying that the condition exists. And nobody would deny, for instance, that psychopaths don't exist just because it's in the...
Not in the book.
Yeah. And there's been opposition raised already by a group calling themselves the National Organisation for Women, or NOW, and they describe this whole parental alienation as junk science, say that this cannot be allowed to enter into the scientific community, as there is nothing scientific about a syndrome disorder where only symptoms are a uterus, divorce papers and bruises. So that's a far out.
Go girls! Go girls! Well, there you go. So we can still count on our feminist friends to always come up with a punchline.
Yes, and to deny the obvious truth.
Now, there's another story in an edition of Fathers and Families this week. An interesting one where there's been a high-profile lesbian custody battle in Ohio. In that case, there was a lesbian biological mum and there was a sperm donor, and they were pitted against the social mum. And in this case, there was a 4-year-old child who'd resided with the biological mum since the breakup of the
relationship. So, excuse me, what's a social mum? What's the difference there?
Well, the social mum is not biologically related to the child. It's the lesbian partner of the biological mother.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, the kid's got two mothers.
That's it. Yeah. And this is a situation where fathers and families have actually gone into bat for the... what we just call the social mum, the woman who's not got the biological relationship. And this is a situation where there are some similarities to fathers who are prevented from seeing their children. There's been a relationship built up. It's something like an adoption arrangement as well. And fathers and families, I think, correctly defend the right of all fit parents to play a meaningful role in their children's lives. And from the point of view of fathers in our society, maybe this is something we should look at. You know, if we can get the, if we can support some of the lesbian community in this sort of relationship, we might add a new constituency.
Well, if we can get the Dykes on side, they're very militant, they're very motivated, and, you know, they're movers and shakers. They've got a lot of influence.
Well, they ride motorbikes, don't they?
Yeah. You got to watch those girls, especially the ones with chainsaws.
Wouldn't that be ironic, though, to have the Dykes... the Dykes on bikes stand up for non-custodial rights.
That would be a delicious irony.
A delicious irony. Yes. And just a little bit of good news here too, from America, but in the state of Louisiana, there's been a bill presented by Representative Harrison on joint and shared custody. And there is now going to be, well, if this legislation gets through, there's going to be a rebuttable presumption of shared physical custody in all cases.
Heaven forbid.
The presumption may be rebutted by clear and convincing evidence of abuse, neglect, or criminal activity. And the bill goes on to make certain provisions about providing parenting plans, which will allocate as far as possible equal share time to the parents, subject to those ways of being able to rebut the presumption. Now, that might form a model for what we're looking for, going back to our first story about the meeting recently of a lot of the men's groups. And
yes, the rebuttable presumption of 50-50 shared equal parenting time.
So it's been done. We just need to get something like that into the hands of the legislators and say, this is really what we're looking for.
And our children need.
That's right. And there was also Senator Fielding's attempt back in 2006 to get something along these lines, and we finished up with the equal shared responsibility, whatever that means. But at least I suppose it's a start. As long as we don't go backwards, and if we can keep rolling that forward, we might eventually get to some fairness in this whole area.
Well, let's hope so. That's basically what we're hoping for. All right, well, I think that pretty much wraps us up for another week. Anything anybody else would like to add to any of that? You've got about half a minute.
Right. Well, two wrongs don't make a right. And when it comes to this ironic stuff, that would be truly ironic.
Well, that's true. And there's been far too many wrongs for fathers' rights. How's that?
Very good, Ian.
Now, don't forget, this show will be on the net. You can go to www.dadsontheair.net, and that should be available in the next 24 hours. And following us now, we have Country On with Country Bob.
We're here 'cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.